Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, September 26, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Right there on the homepage, you can submit questions to our relationship expert, Dr. Frankie. She's going to be on the show next week, so get us some new questions because she will answer them right here on the air and right there on the homepage at thisshowissogay.com. You can also make a donation. We're trying to get 1,000 people to donate $10 each as we raise money for the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride. That's all right there on thisshowissogay.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That's always a possibility. And of course, go to the Facebook. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have a jam-packed show for you this week, so we must get started. I came across last week a Kickstarter campaign raising money for an oral history project called Out Loud, which is seeking to capture important firsthand at-length oral histories from significant surviving pioneers before the opportunity passes, and then disseminate those oral histories in widely available video and online formats. Here to talk about both the project and the campaign are two pioneers themselves, and I told them off the air, these bios do not befit their unbelievable past in their fight for equality, but I have to introduce them anyway because you got to know who they are. Stephen F. Dansky has been a political activist, writer, and photographer for more than a half century. He was a member of the legendary Gay Liberation Front after New York City's Stonewall Rebellion in 1969. He is the publisher of the independent book company Christopher Street Press, LLC. He's the author of a ton of books. As a photographer, his work has been exhibited all over the country. Apparently, he finds time to be a licensed psychotherapist and was a healthcare administrator during the AIDS pandemic. He is also a marriage equality pioneer and was married in Massachusetts on that very first day in that very first state when same-sex marriage became legal anywhere in the U.S. So that's pretty darn exciting. He is joined by John Noble. John was a high-profile member of the Gay Liberation Front beginning in November 1969 and participated in many early demonstrations and street protests. John co-authored the first important document on gay men's consciousness raising called On Our Own, spoke at colleges and other venues. After moving to California in 1978, John pursued a career in gay publishing as an executive at The Advocate, where he ran their circulation and direct marketing efforts for 33 years, John. His writings from the GLF era appeared in the newspaper Come Out and in early gay liberation anthologies, including Out of the Closets, Voices of Gay Liberation. I tell you both truly, John, Stephen, it is an honor to welcome you to this show, Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you, Ken, for asking us. I really appreciate it.
What a treat. Okay, so much to talk about. Stephen, let's start with you. My biggest fear in this introduction, which again could have been so much longer, is that we have listeners who don't know half of what I'm talking about. And I know we're going to talk about the Oral History Project, but reflect for me a bit on just what it means to be involved in efforts that so many people in the LGBT community don't know about.
Well, I think it's been several years since the film Milk came out,
right,
and garnered so much attention. And I think because of that film, people became aware of the beginnings of the gay and lesbian transgender movement. But actually, Milk is over a decade later,
yeah,
than some of the earliest activist things that occurred in the movement, such as the Stonewall Rebellion. And so it is our attempt to really focus on those days that really are focus on the forerunners of the gay movement and marriage equality. I think it's very important that we do that. And so Out Loud is an attempt to garner those histories through an oral history project.
Amazing. John, how do you even wrap your mind around? I know you lived it, so it might be easier for you to wrap your mind around it than it is for me. But how do you wrap your mind around that time for LGBT Americans?
I know, it is incredible. I came to New York City to go to graduate school in 1969 with a bit of political experience behind me with the anti-war movement at the University of Wisconsin. But the amazing things that happened in New York City because of the confluence of lots of college graduates who had that kind of anti-war experience behind me. The feminist movement, the black civil rights movement, all met in New York at a very special time in 1969 when gay people fought back against the police raid at a gay bar in a significantly public way that triggered a number of things. I often think Stonewall itself, well, it's the catalyst for a new gay and lesbian movement that occurred at that time, was actually, a riot could have been something. There had been protests against the police raids on bars in other cities and also in New York at other times, but nothing came of it. But for some reason, within 3 weeks, a group of gay activists formed a new organization called the Gay Liberation Front and asked people to join them on a protest demonstration from Washington Square Park to Sheridan Square, or the other way around. I can't quite remember which way it went. But the beginnings of a political organization that then spread within 2 years to cities around the nation and around the world. I happened to be there. I just lucked out, as did Stephen. Some of us were just in New York at the right time and were ready to get into the streets and to say, you know, we're not going to live like the past generation. We're going to try to have lives that we can live proudly and openly, unlike people before us.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, I agree with, I think it's important to realize that the birth of the gay movement is part of a continuum of struggle towards human rights and equality, that the gay liberation movement probably couldn't have come about if it weren't for our forerunners and the black civil rights movement, as John mentioned, and the feminist movement. I think it's part of a historical continuum. I was a leftist for many years before the birth of gay liberation. I was involved in the anti-war movement and community organizing on New York's Lower East Side.
Stephen, in looking at the landscape today and looking at our political organizations such as they are, what could they learn from the Gay Liberation Front?
Well, the Gay Liberation Front was really about activism and about equality for all people. One of the things that occurred for us was that it happened in a time when the war in Vietnam was still going on.
Right.
So the Gay Liberation Front was very much a part of worldwide movement of many different aspects. So I think what's important today is not to rest easy with marriage equality. I think marriage equality is very important. And as you mentioned, Barry Safran and I were married in 2004 in Massachusetts on the first day in the first state of marriage equality. But I don't see that as an end in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I see that as the beginning of what's really important in terms of equality. Of course, I believe secular marriage is a universal right between consenting adults. You know, and as a founder of the gay liberation movement, I couldn't have conceived 4 decades later that same-sex marriage would become a reality. Our mantra then was come out and to establish our viability as a people. But it's never been our sole raison d'etre, as marriage equality isn't now. So as long as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people are entrapped, imprisoned, killed, here and globally, our work is still in progress. Look at what's happening in Russia.
Yeah.
And in terms of the very repressive laws in Russia. So I see that this is all part of the continuum of struggle toward human equality, to human justice.
John, talk to me about that word liberation, because it's not a word that I hear any of our organizations using, and I think it's more than applicable in any number of contexts for the LGBT community at this point.
Liberation is kind of different from gay activism in a way. There were two kinds of gay activism from the very beginning. People who took a look at gender politics and in the context of the feminist movement and talked about how social life itself as it's lived in heterosexual marriages is something that can be criticized, that sexism, that the patriarchy, that male power is really a root of evil in the world, and that social change on a very broad level called liberation could lead to major societal changes, not just for gay, lesbians, and bisexual people, but for women, for people of color, and that there was a broad-based sense of the world needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
An analysis, a political analysis around gender issues and male supremacy that was felt to be extremely important and at the heart of what was going on, as opposed to a second avenue of gay activism at the time, which focused entirely on gay rights on rights for gays and lesbians, without much context of changing the world as a whole, a context of making gay people's lives better within the context of the existing order. And both of those things continue to this day.
It's a good question, because liberation is really about freedom.
Yeah.
It's really about something that's visionary, something that's actually never existed before except in our imagination. And our imagination suggests that maybe people could live together without power dominance, without one person having authority, control, and ownership over another person. And right now, because we live in a patriarchal society, we live in a culture that has male privilege over women. And we suspect that that's going to change, probably not in our lifetime, but we've seen extraordinary changes over the last four decades since the birth of the second wave of feminism. But liberation is freedom. First and foremost, it's about being free.
And one of the things that I left out of both of your bios, because I wanted to talk about it a little bit later on, which we'll do now, is the work that you two have done as co-founders of feminism, and the idea that there is so much more that we could be doing to be working together. And I would love to hear your take on that. You know, Stephen, there are perceived by many a fractured divide, not even just between men and women, but between gays and lesbians. And I just feel like in doing this show for so many years, I hear so constantly about the divisive work. And it just strikes me when I was reading so much of what you both have written, there is so much more work that we could be doing together.
Well, I think there's always going to be divisiveness. I'm thinking of a comment that was made in a book by Dennis Altman. It was one of the first books on gay liberation that came out in 1971, and it said that we were advocating violence when we talked about words such as liberation. And I had thought, well, I really wasn't advocating violence. I was actually advocating changing diapers. And what I thought was really important is that we focused on life-giving and caregiving. And at that point, it was almost unheard of that gay men would be involved in childcare.
Right.
And so many, many years ago, I became involved, as John did, with the care of a young boy who was only, at the time I met him, he was only 6 months old. And I learned how to change diapers. So to me, you can't be divisive if you're actually providing care and life-giving to another individual. Then you don't have time to be divisive. And so one of the things that helps me in terms of my work and my direction is to try to keep focus, because there is so much negativity that one can get involved with. All you have to do is have a Twitter account and
right.
be aware of how nasty life can be. But if that only can occur if you get off focus. For instance, in the AIDS epidemic, that's another example of caregiving. There was no time to be divisive. When you're talking about life and death and the care of another individual who is struggling to stay alive, you can't be divisive. So I would say that divisiveness only comes when people are off mission and involved too much in their own ego rather than the care of other people. And I extend that to the care of the community.
And the Gay Liberation Front did so much cross-racial work, and that's another area where, okay, where is the dedication of effort here to be working across racial lines, to be bringing about further change? We could be doing more, right?
Well, I think the Gay Liberation Front was always across racial lines. We had many members who were African-American and Latino, so that was not unusual at that time. I think there has to be more outreach to the communities. One of the things that happened during the AIDS epidemic is that there was a greater understanding of how we all are in this struggle together.
Yeah.
Because there's no time in our lives to not see our struggle together. And I think there was tremendous outreach in the gay community toward people of color. Professionally, when you mentioned in my bio that I was a hospital administrator, healthcare administrator, the clinic I ran was an HIV clinic on 120th Street and Lexington Avenue in the heart of Harlem.
Yeah.
And I saw that as very important as a gay white male to be to be in that community, offering what I had learned for years in the AIDS epidemic.
Unbelievable. Look, I could have you two on for hours, which I think is the whole point of this Oral Histories project, that I feel like there's so much of this information that I can't easily access and can't hear the voices. John, talk to me about the impetus for creating this Out Loud effort.
Well, yes, the impulse behind creating an oral history project to capture the stories of the early pioneers of the gay movement kind of derives from a recent reunion that the Gay Liberation Front organized in New York in connection with, well, first the 25th anniversary of Stonewall, then the 40th anniversary, and the most recent, which I think was the 43rd anniversary. Getting these people back together back in New York and a kind of remembering and honoring the work that we all did together in that first decade following Stonewall. Well, as the years go by and our numbers shrink, I mean, I think in 1994, we probably had about 75 to 100 people who had been very active politically in those years. We managed to pull together about 22 people here 43 years after the event. And we realized that a lot of these people had stories to tell as we shared memories. A few of us had written books. A few of us had given interviews over the years. But a lot of the stories simply hadn't been told. And if you could see this room full of white-haired folks, some not in very good health, there was a sense of this is a critical time to try to capture some stories from these people that, in fact, are extremely important and need to be preserved for future generations.
One of the things about Out Loud that I wanted to mention is that we're going everywhere with this project. It's quite portable. And over this past summer, we went down to Durham, North Carolina, to visit an old friend who was an original member of the Gay Liberation Front, who is, you know, has been battling cancer for several years. And we did videotaping in a nursing home while he was on oxygen 24/7. With his urinal hanging on the bed right there, and his brother in the room with us. So there's nowhere we won't go to capture this history. And then in New York City, I went up to visit an old friend who has COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So one of the things that's really incredible about Out Loud is, one, its portability, but also our willingness to travel anywhere in this country to interview people. It is not a regional project. So when you talked about significant oral history, when I think of someone significant, it may be John's uncle, who I met in Waukesha, Wisconsin in 1970. He's now deceased. But when I met him, John told me the story of how this uncle was out and known to his family. To me, that's an oral history I want to capture, how someone in the 1940s with a life partner for his entire adult life was open and out to his family. That's significant to me.
One of the reasons we call this oral history from LGBT pioneers, not from activists or not from some more specific term, is that a pioneer in our mind, of course, includes the activists who formed those first political organizations after Stonewall, but also all people of that first decade who played a role in change and progress for LGBTQ people in the arts, in journalism, in business. Whatever it was that people were doing in those days, they maybe never attended a single political meeting, but they, in their own ways, built the community, which was so much the heritage of that first decade.
Yeah.
Previous to Stonewall, nobody really had a sense of a gay or a lesbian community, a community of people of gender outsiders who formed organizations, who even from the gentrification of neighborhoods and the little gay shops and advertising openly as a gay plumber, or all the gay organizations like the choruses and the softball leagues and the newspapers, all the things that were an outgrowth of that first decade that created really what was a first-time community. Those are the people we'd like to preserve the stories of, and we'd like to go where the stories are, not where the politics was or some other derivative. It's really, who are these wonderful people before they pass?
Also, I think of pioneers as someone who is self-defined as a pioneer, So one of the things that I've asked people who are potential interviewees is, are you a pioneer?
Mm.
And then we explore it to define whether or not they see themselves as a pioneer. And the way I look at it is the pioneer is a pathfinder. And a pathfinder is someone who opens the door for others to follow. It doesn't really mean that they, as John was mentioning, established an organization, was an activist on the street. They're a pathfinder. And I believe it's very important to go everywhere in this country to find them, make sure their stories survive. Everybody is willing to tell a story. Well, the stories that we want to capture are from LGBTQ people.
And that's so important. We've talked about this before, just even with Andrew Solomon and this idea of horizontal identities, the fact that we're not necessarily, our LGBT youth, when they come out, aren't necessarily getting these stories because they're not being passed down necessarily from parent to child. And so the fact that you all are doing your part to create an opportunity for LGBT youth to access the narratives that came before them is huge.
Well, I think the concept is very broad. Our project, just to talk about it a bit, how Loud starts, is a first phase of Wait, We Hope. In future years, we'll expand and we'll include others. But for a first project that we defined, we said, let's do 12 oral histories, significant 4 or 5 hour oral histories with people.
Yeah.
And let's try to raise the seed money that will enable Stephen and I to make those trips, to buy the equipment, to do the editing, and to network with the Gay and Lesbian and other archives where we would place these oral histories following their production. So we decided to go to it's the foremost crowdfunding website at the moment, Kickstarter.
Absolutely.
And set up a project, ask for a modest, achievable goal of $9,000, funding the first 12 interviews, and see where we go from there. Currently, we're very encouraged. After only a few days, we are about one-third of the way towards our goal, with 48 days, as of today, left before the goal period ends. So we're very encouraged. But, of course, we need to achieve our goal in order to really get the seed money to get ourselves moving.
And we will, of course, be providing that link on our website. As you just mentioned, John, you know, you guys are going in this project together, so I'll give you a chance to extol the other's virtues. Stephen, what do you think John brings to this project?
Oh, my goodness. John is second to only one other person. He's my oldest friend in the world. You know, one of the things that I think about in terms of this project and the term pioneer is that I'm going to be 70. And as I approach that birthday, which is a marker, I think of my own mortality, and I guess I feel a sense of urgency. In terms of John, I mean, it's rare for people to have survived the upheaval of the 1970s that he and I lived through, and that our friendship has spanned all these decades. I mean, we have such a sense of loyalty and care for each other. And then, you know, John is someone above all, anyone except for probably my spouse, Barry, is someone who is so trustworthy and honest. He's such a hard worker and so caring. And, you know, someone on Facebook said, who's paying your salaries? Well, we're not getting a salary.
Right.
We're doing this because we're really dedicated to this concept and to this idea. And that's what I could say about John. He said, first and foremost, he thinks about the community over his own self-interest. So he's just an extraordinary person. He was from the day I met him, and I've always loved him.
Well, that was pretty good, but here's the thing.
Wow,
John,
what an outpouring. I'm very, very honored to have this great friendship with Stephen.
Let me say that was good, Stephen, but John has now had quite some time to prepare his answer. So this is gonna just blow us out of the water. Go ahead, John, talk to us about what Stephen brings to the table.
Well, I mean, he has the unique intelligence and leadership skills that, you know, he's one of those people that it can honestly be referred to as a visionary who kind of sees a path and says, let's do this, you know, and it's possible. And I am kind of more the person that facilitates things happening. So it's a good partnership. his intellect, his dedication, you know, and also he's been a photographer for many years. So the videography side of this is very much his skill. We're able to put out, I think, really first-rate oral history videos. These are all videos we're talking about, not just audio recollections, but video. So, you know, it's also very much a working partnership. We think we're pretty uniquely qualified to make the contacts, to do the networking, and to prepare first-rate oral histories.
Without question.
While John and I are partners in this endeavor, we really have to acknowledge a number of other people that we've known for all these decades as well, like Perry Brass and Alan Young and Martha Shelley and Danny Garvin, people who really are supportive to this project. And without their sustenance, I don't think that we could do it alone. Even though John and I are so dedicated, it really is a community effort.
Well, look, we're going to provide the link on the website. I certainly donated today, so I want everybody to get out there. If you are listening, this is the work of our community. This is capturing voices. This is what we're all about on this show, is highlighting the voices of folks who are just being who they are, and changing history or not, being pioneers or not, they are who they are and using their voice to make a difference. And that's the work of just something really special that you both are putting forth. So I exhort our listeners to click on that link, click on that Kickstarter link, give what you can. There are, of course, perks. You can get photographs. I think I'm getting a mug. I'm pretty excited about that. And I might be getting something else. I don't know, but that's not the point. The point is, and I have to say, this is one of those, I love talking about these crowdsource funding campaigns because, you know, previously, of course, we were asking each other for money to support our projects, but this one, you just kind of feel like you're a part of it with crowdsource funding in a way that I've never felt before when I was being asked to give to this or that. So we are encouraging everybody to get out there, give what you can, support this project. Steve and John, what an absolute just honor to have you both on the show. Your history just floors me. The work that you've done for this community just floors me, but also just the fact that you both are about using your voice to make a difference. And in this project, highlighting other people's voices, truly, gentlemen, an honor to have you on the show.
Oh,
thank
Ken,
you very much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And Ken, I have to say that I don't think I've ever floored anybody.
No, oh, you...
I appreciate that you're acknowledging that I still have that capability or that I'm going to develop it.
No, I have to say, just as I was reading your bios, it was a physical pain to cut sentences out of your bios because I'm being entirely serious. Each line is just a part of our history. And I was really struck by the word "our" when I was going through it. I just felt like that we are family in this, and the work that you're doing is just makes such a difference. So truly, you'd both floor me.
Thank you for your terrific radio show.
Stephen and John, an absolute pleasure. Let's get this project funded.
Thank you.
I went all the way to Paris to forget your face. Stained glass, young lives long since past, statues of lovers every place.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have more excitement for you on this week's episode with another guest. Scott Free is a queer music singer-songwriter who has gained acclaim all across this globe. He has twice been named Out Musician of the Year by the Out Music Awards. That was in 2005 and in 2009. He won Out Song of the Year in 2005 for his song Another Day of the Cruelty. His music video Happy Again was in the top 10 videos of 2009 on Logo's The Click List. He received 2 Stonewall Society Pride in the Arts Awards for both Song of the Year and Producer of the Year, and he was inducted into the Stonewall Society's GLBT Hall of Fame in 2005. In 2010, he was inducted into the City of Chicago's Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame. I've never even been to Chicago, and I want to get inducted.
Oh, you haven't.
I know. He has a new single out called Happy Pride Day Moscow, which touches on a topic we're all talking about. But first, Scott Free, welcome to this show, So Gay.
Thank you so much for having me. I really love being here.
I've never been to Chicago.
Oh, my gosh. How can you? Really? Oh, you have got to get there.
And I'm not that far. I'm actually in Cleveland now, so it's not
that far
from Chicago.
Oh, my gosh. You have to get over here.
Extol for me the virtues of gay Chicago.
Well, you know, the really cool thing about Chicago is that we've, over the years, really have developed an amazing queer music scene here. It's
nice.
Really like, it's the best one in the country, really.
Wow.
There's just so many performers, and we have a lot of ongoing series that happened, and so it's a great place for queer musicians, that's for sure. And, you know, recently we've had Naj move here. And,
love Naj.
Yes, and Tim M. West lives here now, and so, yeah, no, it's the place to be. Really.
All right, I'll check it out. Well, we skipped a step. We must start with you, as we start with all of our singer-songwriters. Tell our listening audience why the medium of music, to use your voice, Scott.
Well, I guess just music has been, you know, a part of my life since very, very, very beginning. My parents tell me, I don't remember, but my parents tell me that at the New York World's Fair in 1964, it was just a tiny thing, but that Harry James was performing, the band leader, trumpet player Harry James,
yes.
And they couldn't drag me away. And
wow.
So, I did end up playing trumpet through school, and, but, you know, I had just had a really good music background. Mom got me into piano lessons super early, and, I did the whole, you know, marching band, symphonic band, all that kind of stuff through school, and, I went to a really good high school in terms of music. Our jazz band toured Europe and stuff. So it's just a really good background. And then as an adult, it kind of, you know, I didn't have any, like, pop music background other than, you know, listening and being a fan. But I, you know, self-taught guitar and just have been kind of doing things ever since. So, yeah, I couldn't imagine not doing music.
Where is the song where you play trumpet? Is that coming out soon? We got to get back on that.
Well, Happy Pride Day Moscow does have a trumpet solo in it.
Is it you?
So, yes, it's me.
Okay, oh, see? You made it seem like you don't play it anymore.
Well, listen to judge for yourself. No, I mean, it is one of those things where it's like I pull it out and, like, try to get the lip back into shape for a song, and, you know, I need to be better on the trumpet. But, yeah, I'm kind of mostly piano and guitar-based.
And for folks tuning in, this isn't even a euphemism. He really does play trumpet.
Yeah, exactly. In flute, I play everything.
Yes. Okay, it's not that type of show, Scott. It's not. By the way, and this is totally random ephemera and has nothing to do with anything, but you know that Scott Free is the alias of a superhero?
You know, I came up with my name in the 80s, and very shortly after that, a friend of mine who was a comic book fanatic, he took me to a comic book store and bought me a comic, and I was like, oh, and I thought I was being so original. And then it turns out that, you know, this was way before the internet, and when the internet came along, I was like, oh, my God, was I not original. I mean, there have been so many artists have named themselves Scott Free and bands named Scott Free. And so, you know, it was really cute play on words, but I wouldn't do it again.
But if anyone ever gives you guff, you can just turn to them and say, that's Mr. Miracle to you.
Yeah,
because that's
exactly.
Your superhero. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Now, we have to talk about, I think it was, you know, 60, 70 awards that you've won in the past couple of years
right.
For being an out artist. And we talk about this quite a bit on the show, and there are any number of artists who have actually won out music awards where if you go to their website, there is nary a mention of an out music award.
Oh, yeah.
You sighed
Scott.
Tell us why.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, there was a time when that organization, I think, was doing wonderful things, but I mean, honestly, I had a really bad experience when I won the 2009.
Really? I wasn't even going there. I thought you were sighing because more people should be extolling their Out Music Awards, but apparently there's some drama with the Out Music Awards.
Well, you know, again, I don't want to be like causing drama, but, you know, that year that made the Village Voice had a big commentary about it. And it was kind of a mess because Logo was involved, and because Logo was involved, it turned into this big ordeal. And so, yeah, it was pretty weird. I ended up winning an award, and no one from the organization ever came up to me the entire night.
That's kind of funny, though. You have to see the humor in that. Sorry.
I had to go through, I tried to get into the VIP line and then they wouldn't let me in.
Wait a second. Oh my God. I have to tell you, this is so not the show that we do here, but I'm embracing something different for this week after the skin flute comment. All bets are off. Let's backtrack a second. This is, by the way, for our listening audience, this is the night that we just suddenly changed formats. So this is very exciting. The year that you won an Out Music Award, you couldn't get into the VIP lounge.
I couldn't get, they wouldn't let me in. They gave me the hand. And well, actually the hand was a point. And so they pointed me to the regular line. So it took me like an hour and a half to get into the venue.
Were you holding an Out Music Award at the time? By the way, I have no idea what one even looks like, but were you holding it at the time?
You know, I should have brought my 2005 one. What was I thinking?
This is so amazing.
Yeah, it was a mess. It was a mess. It's too bad. I love to tell this story because it's just so wacky. I mean, you know. I get in there and they didn't reserve any seats for any of the nominees who were all standing around. And then my category's coming up and I go backstage and they wouldn't let me backstage. And I said, no, it's my category. It's my category. And then they announced that I'm the winner. And like the guy that wants to hold me back, I said, guy, I won. That's me. So I go up there and I make my speech and they hand me the award and then I go back and you just kind of expect like a little something, like they might take a photo for some, newspaper or something, and nothing. And so I just kind of stood around. And I mean, I wasn't alone. I have a lot of friends that, I know over the years. So we do hung out and then we kind of left.
This is the best story. The only thing that can make this story better is that if you were suddenly blacklisted from the city of Chicago's Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
By the way, is that an actual place that one could visit, or is it a theoretical construct?
Well, I mean, it's a website.
There you go. It's totally a place.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope, I'm telling you, if there's some way they can block you from that, that's the only way this story gets better. Well, let me change gears in a little bit because I really do want to talk about the topic of being an out artist. And I think that transitions nicely into the Alt Q Festival. For folks who don't know what that is, tell everyone about that.
Well, that was, unfortunately, it's the past, but it was a festival that I did for 12 years at the Old Town School of Folk Music. And it was an annual festival, and it was always a charity. I would, find an organization like on a smaller scale that we would give funds to. And so I just brought in gay and lesbian artists from around the country, and it was, it's a fantastic venue. The Old Town School is really, it's an amazing place. And so it was a really fun event, and Coyote Grace, actually they played it twice, I think, because
Had Ingrid on like last week.
Right, that's why I mentioned Coyote Grace, because, they played, I had like my 10-year anniversary was the best of show, so they ended up playing it twice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But tell us why. Why put together a festival like this? We've been talking about this, and we're talking about this with Kiyomi from Hunter Valentine a few weeks ago so should we be creating festivals and special events where folks can go, especially to see queer artists, or should it be more of an integrated thing? Why did you take the time, and I would imagine some small amount of energy, to put together quite the festival for 12 years featuring queer artists?
Well, I think for a lot of people, it's what defines them as being in the community. And it provides a different way of being part of the LGBT community.
Right.
Because, there's a lot of stereotypes to the community. you know, I mean, a lot of cities have their little boys town. You know, we have ours here in Chicago on Halsted Street. And so there's a lot of things that kind of come along with that. It seems to be kind of, you know, male focused and dance music focused and drinking focused.
Right.
And so it's, you know, and bar focused. And so it does provide a great way to be part of the community, even though you might not kind of fit those or feel like you belong in those kind of segments. So I think it's really important. Now, Alt-Q was kind of a little more on a national scale. I mean, I had national artists. But what I've been doing, I think what I've been kind of focusing more on is just the local scene. I have a show called Homo Latte, which I've
We're going to get to that.
Okay. Yeah, I've been running that for, you know, about the same time, 13 years now, and it definitely will have touring artists if it works into someone's schedule, but for the most part, it's local artists, and again, it's really just one of many regularly occurring queer music events in Chicago, and which makes it just a great place. And again, I think it has to do with just, you know, it's really valid to have a community that you feel a part of and not have it be defined in one term.
Yeah.
That's why I think I put all the energy into what I do. I mean, I certainly have my own music that I try to put out there and get exposure on, but it's kind of, I guess I made this decision that, okay, I'm going to, you know, live my life in the gay community, and this is how I'm going to do it.
Nice. So, well, as you mentioned, you are indeed still making music, of course, and your newest single is called Happy Pride Day Moscow, which we will be playing for everybody. Tell us a little bit about this song.
There's an organization in Chicago called Gay Liberation Network, and they had invited Nicholas... Oh, gosh, now I'm going to forget his last name. He's very involved in the gay rights movement in Moscow.
Okay.
And so they invited him here, and I kind of wanted to have a song, and so I wrote this song because it was about the song is really just a commentary on the attempts at pride marches that have been going on for years in Moscow, and they've been attacked by both the police and neo-Nazi groups, and then there have been huge counter-protests by religious organizations, and it's kind of been a disaster every year, and now it sounds like I don't even know that they're going to even try with the new laws. So, I guess with everything that has been happening recently and with, you know, the Olympics coming, I just thought, oh, I really need, you know, and I hadn't put any music out in so many years that I thought, well, I need to at least put this single out since I had written it, and it just seemed really apropos. And so, and I also kind of just liked there when all the news broke about what was happening, and the Russian authorities had sent out a letter that to the Olympic Committee stating the fact that because their law is applied equally to all of its citizens, that it's not discriminatory.
Sure, that and makes sense, right?
I just thought, oh, that is just so perfect.
Yes.
That doublespeak is so great. So, I mean, the song is very sarcastic, and it has a very kind of a punk aesthetic to it. It's kind of a ska punky song. But, yeah, the plot, if you want to say that, is it's kind of a twinkie gay boy who goes to Moscow for gay pride and is clueless and doesn't realize he just thinks it's all one big gay pride party.
Right. so as the definitive source on our show right now on Russia, that's you right this second, by the way, should we boycott the Olympics or no? What do you think, Scott?
Isn't that a rough one?
It's so rough.
Rough. I swear, I have a memory of, and I'm not an athlete at all, but I just have this memory of which Olympics was it that we boycotted in, was it 80 or 84? And I just remember feeling so bad for those athletes. I'm like, they worked their entire life for that, and then you boycott because of politics? It just, you know, and I guess I understand, you know, I understand the political point of it, but I also think that it's going to be the biggest international exposure for gays and lesbians ever in our history. So, I mean, the topic, you know how it is with these days with Olympics, there's always, you know, a side kind of social issue around them. And this is the social issue.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be huge exposure for us around the world. And so, you know, yeah.
I just get worried about the safety piece. I just get worried about the safety piece. That's all.
Okay. Right. Right. Yeah. I have a feeling that there's going to be so much coverage around it. I don't think Russia was going to do a thing. And
the
way I kind of wrote a sarcastic song is just, it just seems so kind of retro. It's like, really anti-gay?
Right.
It's so, right. Are you kidding me? And especially from Russia, you know, like the Berlin Wall came down and we had Gorbachev and it just all seemed to be going so well. And then, you know, it just seems so out of place. It
right.
just doesn't, you know.
Now, I don't think that you can get the U.S. delegation to do it, but I think one of those tinier countries, we could start some sort of movement to get them to play Happy Pride Day Moscow right. as they walk in. I don't, again, the U.S. might be a stretch.
Would, yeah, right?
But do they, if
we
they still have, we will
I'll
work on that.
I'll work on my international connection.
If they have still that Jamaican bobsled team or some, you know, something with a smaller delegation that's looking for attention.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, this is going to forever be known. After 231 episodes, this is the episode where our format changed.
Yeah.
We became the gossipy.
Radically
yes.
Political.
From here on out, this is the Chicago-based This Show Is So Gay. So that's very exciting. Very exciting. Well, where can folks go to learn all about the cool things that you are doing?
Well, my website is scottfree.net. And right now it's a little in transition, but because I've been working on so many projects that are kind of not quite out yet, and so yeah, and there's a link there. You can get Happy Pride Day Moscow as a free download over at Bandcamp.
Perfect.
So yeah,
and we'll provide that link to folks. What will my role be at Homo Latte when I come to visit?
Oh my gosh! Well, you want to do a reading?
I could do a reading.
Yeah, it's actually, the format is a spoken word artist and a musician or like band. And it's usually kind of acoustic-y kind of thing. It's a listening room. It's in a space called Tweet, which is part of a bar called Big Chicks. And it's a great, yeah, listening room kind of a space. So yeah, definitely come and do a reading.
I'm sorry, is it in a space called Tweet at a bar called Big Chicks? Is that what you actually just said?
You don't know a lot about Chicago, do you?
Surely I misheard. That is the greatest thing ever.
You know, they really are. Tweet is an incredible restaurant, and Big Chicks is just a great bar. It's really, really cool.
By the way, how amazing would it be? When's the next Homo Latte?
Tuesday, October 1st, and we've got Story Devereaux and a rapper named T.O.V.
How amazing would it be if, a la the Out Music Awards, they suddenly would not let you in to Homo Latte?
Right. Well, I know I'm in trouble, but oh well. Oh well.
Well, we are going to play your new single right now. It is available free to download. Folks should go check it out. We will provide a link right there on our website. Hey, Scott, what an absolute treat having you on the show. I want to come visit.
Yeah, thank you so much. And yes, definitely come visit. Oh, yeah, we can definitely hook you up at Homo Latte.
Awesome. Scott, please keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Thank you so much, man.
Happy Pride Day, Moscow. Smoke bombs hanging out the sugar body. Still tells them seeing stomach is porno movie. Had the camouflage on, twirling rubber batons. Happy Pride Day, Moscow. Rocket flares like disco spotlight. Right here like leather ball on fetish night. Marching in with the dead, all of a parade. Happy Pride Day, Moscow. All the residents were pouncing between men. Getting boys, all the kinky callas in them. They're not careful, they may get injured. I don't think they've ever heard of a safe word. Hey, you're stepping on that rainbow flag. I guess it makes a decent cleaning rag. The skin is spinning on us, what a shocker. We gay Americans love queer punk rockers. Happy Pride Day, Moscow. The rat-a-tat of the OTSO2s. The sexy buzz got some swastika.
America tattoos on Sunday nationalists. Certainly I paid fists. Happy Pride Day, Moscow. Michael rests like a hardcore bondage scene. Flooded and grid on methamphetamine. That wacky flow was ideal. Those paddy wagons were real. Happy Pride Day, Moscow. Someone did pitch a bunch of candle holders. Stopped at the tomb of the unknown soldier. So they prevented us from laying flowers. I mean, who cares? It was taking hours. Those orthodox men had me panting. But I couldn't hear my share song over all that chanting. Did you say Moscow is not Sodom? Well, hello, you had the wrong Madonna.
Folks, and we are back. Well, unsurprisingly, not a ton of time to throw some LGBT news stories out at you, but I'm still going to give it my all because there's some stuff that we need to talk about. In my home state of New Jersey, two Republicans in the New Jersey State Assembly have pledged to vote in favor of overriding Governor Chris Christie's veto of marriage equality legislation during a lame duck session following November's elections. Marriage equality supporters, including the New Jersey United for Marriage campaign, are working to obtain 12 additional votes in the Assembly and three more in the Senate in order to obtain a two-thirds majority by the January deadline. Christie vetoed the bill last February. He wanted folks to vote on it because apparently we still think, some of us, that the majority of people should vote on the minority of people's rights. Fairly sure we got rid of that, but, you know, it's still alive and well in some states. So we will keep our eyes on New Jersey to see what happens in the next couple months. Over in California, the National Organization for Marriage, I should just always start that by saying, our friends at the National Organization for Marriage, they have joined the Privacy for All Students Coalition. It's an actual coalition, which is dedicated to putting California's new transgender youth protection law up for popular vote. Gosh, it's almost like we just talked about that in the last story. This organization, this coalition, which was influential in the whole campaign to pass Prop 8 in 2008, will likely hire paid petition circulators to help gather the 504 plus thousand signatures necessary to suspend the law until elections in November 2014. So this was a law that was enacted to help protect transgender youth. And of course, what this group is now saying is, hey, we should put the minority rights up for everyone to talk about. It's crazy. A little bit crazy. Hey, kudos to Lance Bass. Kind of really like this story. Lance Bass, he was on Bethany Frankel's show, cleverly titled Bethany, and he played a round of Would You Ever backstage. He pulled questions out of a fishbowl, one of which was, quote, would you ever lie to help a closeted celebrity stay closeted? And he said this, quote, yes, I would, and I have. I know tons of celebrities that are in the closet right now, but it's up to them to decide if they want to come out or not, and I will support any decision they make. Kudos to Lance. It would be so easy for him to just say, yes, these people are gay, and I'm just telling all of you because I know that they're gay. And quite frankly, I'm sure he knows some very influential celebrities who are gay who would make a huge difference if they came out and would honestly make life a lot better for a ton of folks. But we're not into outing, and Lance Bass is not into it either, so kudos to him. Our neighbor to the north, in Canada, a 20-year-old St. Thomas University student says that a Canadian church dismissed him from his job volunteering. He was dismissed from his job volunteering in the children's ministry. Why? Of course. This show is so gay. Why do you think? Because of his sexual orientation. In a Monday interview this past Monday with Global News, Colin Briggs explained that he had volunteered at the Cross Point Wesleyan Church in Fredericton for years until he was kicked out of the program last week. He also worked as a camp counselor for 2 years and joined a mission to Haiti. He said, quote, "They basically told me that they would prefer that I wouldn't volunteer there because I was gay. I went to sign up again this year to volunteer, and I didn't think anything would be a big deal." And then, yeah, they just kind of got rid of him there. His story went viral after he spoke out to a campus newspaper. Pastor Mark Brewer told the newspaper that he had asked Briggs to stop volunteering to, quote, avoid any potential uproar that may be caused if families were to find out an openly gay male was working in the children's ministry. Brewer went on to say, quote, "Having an openly gay male working in the children's ministry may cause some parents to feel uncomfortable." I'm going to read that one again. This pastor said, quote, "Having an openly gay male working in the children's ministry may cause some parents to feel uncomfortable." So, of course, this church, instead of standing up and saying, look, this is okay, this is the Cross Point Wesleyan Church in Fredericton, they've had this guy volunteering for them for years and years, and instead of them standing by him and saying, look, he works so amazingly with our children, this is actually an opportunity for us to be role models and for us to be leaders and for us to say, hey, this is okay because this is an individual who's doing great work. No, they fired him from his volunteer position instead. And finally, we turn our attention to my current state, maybe it's my rest of my life state, we'll see, of Ohio, a lawsuit seeking to have the out-of-state marriages of two gay Ohio couples recognized on death certificates has been expanded to include all similarly situated couples, despite a statewide ban on gay marriage. Attorneys are now asking federal judge Timothy Black to require Ohio's health department director to order funeral directors and coroners to list gay clients as married if they were legally wed in another state. Black approved a request to expand the lawsuit on Wednesday and is expected to issue a ruling not till December. So we got to hang out and wait till December. So that's us keeping our eyes on Ohio. We're keeping our eyes on Canada. We're keeping our eyes on California, in New Jersey, and now Ohio. And that's all we have time for on this week's show. Get out there, folks. Go use your voice to be a pioneer, to make a difference, to write a song, to do whatever it is that you do to make a difference for your LGBT brothers and sisters. And of course, while you're doing it, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Just a friend, that's all.